When Helen Ritchie was young, her mother used to explain away their lack of relatives by saying they just perished. The they was a mystery. So was perished. Her lack of understanding led to a 50-year journey to find out how her family came to be Jewish refugees in New Zealand and to try to discover what happened to those left behind in Europe. Her mother, Liddy,
yes,
once knew, courtesy of a letter she received 5 months after the liberation of the Nazi concentration camps. But she burned the letter, something 70 years later she admitted regretting. Helen travelled to Europe many times, researching and trying to fit pieces of her family's puzzle together. She spent 30 years on the Wellington City Council, becoming the longest-serving councillor and the first woman ever elected to be the city's deputy mayor. The result of her meticulous personal research is the book The Burned Letter, A New Zealander's Holocaust Mystery. And Helen Ritchie is in the Wellington studio. Kia ora, welcome. Good morning.
Kia ora, Catherine, and thank you very much. This is a privilege.
Can we start perhaps with what you didn't know about your family? Because that was the story at the beginning, wasn't it?
Yes, I knew very little about the family. I knew my mother's name, my grandmother's name. They came together. But I, you know, they spoke German, they spoke Polish, my grandmother. I knew they came from Czechoslovakia, from Poland. I knew that we had a factory, but all I could envisage was some bricks on a wall. I knew nothing about it, and there was nobody left to tell us.
So those few glimpses were just part of conversations that would be had around you, and like any child, bits get tucked away.
They weren't even really conversations. They were just, little bits of, they all just perished. All those relations just perished. There wasn't a lot of discussion, but the Holocaust was always present in my life.
Right. So you would ask sometimes as a child, and it would be they just perished.
I don't even ask, but I read. And in those early days, there wasn't actually much information about the Holocaust, partly because of the repression, actually, in the communist Poland and Czechoslovakia. So I was curious, but there was not a lot to ask. My mother would talk about her early childhood, and she'd become very animated and excited when she talked about her hometown, but she never talked about the detail of the Holocaust. And I think that was partly she burnt that letter. She thought that by turning it all into ashes, that the trauma and the story and the horror would disappear. Of course, that didn't happen. And she would say, particularly in her, you know, last years, she would say, every day I'm in Auschwitz. She was actually never in Auschwitz. She would also say, you know, I still cry. And that was, she died at age 92.
How much do you want to tell us about the letter? Obviously, this is, the title of the book. It's a key point of the book. There's many poignant turns and moments in the book. So I'll leave it to you. How much you want to tell us about the letter your mother burned?
Well, first of all, I thought I'd just read the kind of the setting. A poem right at the beginning, which I wrote in the prologue. Burned, loomed large in my life. Burned people. Burned babies. Burned in ovens. Burned books. Burned people. In specially designed and fabricated ovens. Who were they? Why? What would they have become? Burned is so finite, gone. Burned 80 years ago, ashes. Burned letter. What was in it? And that's the beginning of, that just sets the scene, I suppose, for my search, which in the beginning was not a very conscious search. It was actually to find the concentration camps, which I couldn't find, except because they'd been razed. In Bergen-Belsen, there were the ashes under the ground. Of course, I couldn't see. It was just heather, heath, and sand. And in Dachau, which I went to later, or tried to in 1989, Because my search started in 1969, there were people making merry in front of the gate with a beer festival, so I didn't actually go in. My relentless search culminated, I suppose, in about 3 years of intensive search, research, after I left council. I said no to everybody who wanted me to do whatever, and also some more travel until COVID hit. And along the way, there were some... It was sometimes as if an invisible hand, and that's the only way I can describe it, guided me to complete strangers in New Zealand and in Czechoslovakia, Czech Republic, in Sweden, in Sydney, all sorts of places, with all sorts of information, which was crucial sometimes. So in New Zealand, my mother did say two things. She mentioned the name Mr. Keith and Masterton.
What were the significance of each?
In 2011, just before I was to go to the Czech Republic, there were two events. This was one. I was communicating with a man called Stuart Keith, just by email, and he started to say, he said that he came from the Wairarapa, and his name, his surname was Keith. So I took a hunch. I took a guess, and I said, did your grandfather or father save or have anything to do with some refugees from Europe? And because they went, Mr. Keith and Masterton, Wairarapa, that was all I had. And he said, that was my grandfather, his grandfather. And then we exchanged, you know, with goosebumps. We were both completely astonished and flabbergasted. He had a cache, a file of letters written by my grandmother from Czechoslovakia, Prague, to Mr. Keith.
And the only way you found him was because that was a name your mother used, Mr. Keith Masterton. That's you find right. The grandson, and then the grandson has got all this information.
Grandson's got these letters. He's got the original letters that were written by my grandmother and also by a mother's cousin. Who actually, the cousin, who was young, and Mr. Keith, if I read the letters carefully, they flirted quite a lot between the lines. So Stuart Keith said he spent a couple of hours with this lovely man, Mr. Fantle. Well, Fantle was our family name. My mother was Liddy Fantle, later married, became Hess. My grandmother was Paula Fantle, born Bornstein. Mr. Fantle was my uncle. Stuart Keith had found him in the White Pages. Do you remember the White Pages? He found him in the White Pages, and he went to see this lovely man. But not only that, he then went on to say in the emails that Mr. Fantle, he said, had an older sister in a rest home in Nainai. And I thought, how does he know all this? That's my mother. That was my mother. He didn't know that. I didn't tell him who I was because I was in politics and he was a radio announcer. He used to read the news and I wanted to stay anonymous. However, we met eventually after an exchange of emails and, you know, I said, as you do, I've got dark hair and I'll have bright colours on. I knew that I would recognise him because he had a file under his arm. We met, I saw the letters, and there's a much longer story, which is in the book, about these letters. You know, through this story that I have looked at, there have been some very good people. Mr. Keith was one of them.
So tell me about Grandfather Keith and what he did.
Mr. Keith was, he was an accountant, slash, I think he had a farm from the letters, I could say a small farm. He was a kind of an upstanding pillar of the community, in a way. And he decided to sponsor completely strange people, strange in many ways, across the other side of the world, and he fought for the visas, the entry visas for my mother and grandmother, and he really had to fight hard because there were very few refugees, Jewish refugees, allowed to enter New Zealand.
And he did this out of altruism and determination.
He just stood up and decided this was what he was going to do. And, you know, he engaged the mayor, he engaged the local MP. He, as far as I could see, went to the office in Wellington and said to them, you have to do this, when he had been refused, and so on. So a really good person, and of course I wouldn't be sitting here telling you this story had it not been for him, because my mother and my grandmother were saved. My uncle, Bobby Fantall, whom he had visited, Stuart Keith had visited, was sent on a kinder transport, a children's train from Czechoslovakia by his widowed mother with 669 children. Without going into the detail, it was a Winton, Sir Nicholas Winton transport. He saved 669 children, of which there were one or two other relatives. And in 214, I met Nicholas Winton, aged 105.
This was in 2014.
In 2014.
Right, you met the person who ran the train that saved your uncle and 660 others.
Yeah.
It's
an astonishing story.
Look, it's an astonishing story, an almost, and I don't mean this pejoratively, almost obsessive pursuit. Once you started, did you have to keep going to get as many answers as you could?
Certainly in the last 3 years. I would call it relentless.
Apart from the obvious, what was driving it? You mentioned your mother burning the letter, and again, the letter had a lot of information, right? Mm. Burning the letter was her way of almost thinking, this ends here now.
Yeah.
I can leave this now.
Yep.
It didn't leave her.
No.
And neither did it leave the next generation, right?
I think it's part of our lives. Those of us who have parents who were Jewish refugees to New Zealand or in other parts of the world as well. For me, first of all, I was the sole representative, and I have through my life felt a significant duty both to serve the community that I've been in or am in, but also now to tell the story for the next generation and for people to understand what happened, that there were good people, but there were very, very bad people as well. The very, very bad Nazis and a system who created a horrific system which was only to murder millions of people who happened to have the label that they were Jewish.
As you are pursuing this and finding out more and filling in more gaps, those people are becoming real to you as well, right?
Yes.
They're not just part of a family tree that you wanted to put together.
No.
They became real to you.
They became alive, which is really quite strange. But it was important for me to understand who these people were, who these people, my relatives, my family.
You write, often there weren't graves. And almost it was like they hadn't existed. And this is what the fight is about, isn't it?
Oh.
No way does anyone get to determine that someone else didn't exist.
That's right. They were dehumanised in major ways from the Nuremberg laws and so on. They were, and there's a lot of detail about that. They became just numbers. They had no graves, except one grandfather of mine had a grave because he died before the Holocaust. And it was as if they didn't exist. And I wanted as well, consciously or unconsciously, to have these people come alive. I don't think that was a conscious thing, but that's what happened to a degree. And actually, I was able also to find them. In the letter, these people, I only realised yesterday, day before, that they were all my uncle, my mother's uncles and aunts of that side of the family who were murdered. There was her favourite cousin, aged 23, with whom she had spent lovely time in Prague, even though Hitler was there. My mother would say that was the best year of her life because she was 18. She had her first love, she had her first job, and she had people around her whom she loved, and she had to leave all of that, her hometown, the people she loved most. These people, I wanted to give them a life, to wonder what they could have contributed, what they did contribute, and if to understand them a little bit more than just a number.
Mm. Our guest is Helen Ritchie. The book is The Burned Letter, A New Zealander's Holocaust Mystery. Decades of research has gone into this very intensively in the last years, as you've just heard. You're listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National. So you were finding names, you were finding connections, but as you said, you also travelled further than Masterton, that's for sure. Yes. Can you tell us a little about finding the Fenthill House, perhaps, in Volhynia? You actually found this place before your mother died. This is in...
In 2012.
2012, yes. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, so this was another, you know, an example of, first of all, the invisible hand, and secondly, that there were good people, and that there are good people around us, which is wonderful. So there was Thomas in Sweden, Jerzy in the Czech Republic, and Lindsay in Sydney. Jerzy, a complete stranger, was able to guide me to my grandfather's and siblings' house in a small, lovely town called Volhynia in the Czech Republic. He started off his guiding by saying he had a painting. He had a painting of my mother, Liddy, and my uncle, Bobby. I didn't know how he had this painting. I didn't know where my grandfather's house was. I didn't know who Jerzy was, and I didn't know how he connected to me. This painting had been thrown out by the Nazis of the house of my grandfather's house and their siblings, along with the people in the house and all the furniture and all the other paintings. Everything went to the tip. The people didn't go to the tip, but they were murdered. And 80 years or many years later, I was able to see the painting, have the painting, and as a New Zealander, bring it home in my pack, as you do. I also met the woman who witnessed this. She was by then 90. She was 8 when she saw the bewildered people, relatives, the Star of David, standing in the market square wondering what had happened. Her mother had liked the painting, wanted to save it, put it on the wall in their house, was told to take it down. You don't have Jewish children sitting on the wall. She put it behind a cupboard, and Yuji's parents found it. They lived opposite in their attic 80 years later, and that's the story of the painting and of grandfather's house and the town, which is lovely. Mm.
You found the factory as well that we were talking about earlier.
Yes. Yes, so that was a really interesting thing, and all I can say is that, you know, we used to have the Evening Post in Wellington, which was a newspaper, and in it, Hank Skouten wrote this on August 9, 1995, so that was the year I visited and found the factory operating. It's since been demolished, and there's a big story about that, a big chapter or two. And he says, by rights, Helen Ritchie and the few surviving members of her family could now call themselves Polish textile tycoons. The former Wellington City Councillor has just returned from 2 weeks in Poland. So, yes, I found the factory. The estate, 15 hectares in the middle of the town with a number of family houses on it. The villa or the palace or whatever of the family, which is still there, and all of it, of course, stolen. Stolen by the Nazis, confiscated, and it remains in, I don't know whose hands now, even though I tried to find out.
There were many emotional moments, and some of them must have been moments of shock realisation of the horror of this. This is the hotel you booked into,
yes.
Its location. People can read about that in the book. Mm. But what does it all... answer for you? If it's a puzzle, it's about your mother, it's about your family, it's about you. And now, having done it, what is the answer that you've got from it?
Well, I think first of all, I became much closer, and this is quite sad, to my mother after she died. I understood she had quite an unusual life, but she was a trailblazer in her own right. She founded a business at age 38, which Vitalia Health Foods, which produced health foods and breads, many breads which did not exist in this country at that time, and that lasted for 50 years. I also managed to obviously unravel some information. I think ultimately these stories are about identity. You know, my son's partner is Maori, and she has many, 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 many cousins. And, you know, I had no whakapapa. I had no background. I had no knowledge of my family beyond the Holocaust family. I now have that. And that is really important in terms of your own identity, I think. So perhaps I'll just read you, from a young man who became a reform rabbi in the Czech Republic, and he says the Shoah, the Hebrew word for the Holocaust, plays a big role in self-definition of what it means to be Jewish. But the most important thing, he said, is that we should never lose hope. And I think that's a really also important lesson for all of us. The horror, the good people, the really bad system, the cautionary tale, which needs to be told with the rise of anti-Semitism now and extremism, authoritarian governments, which I knew and I know, but those stories need to be told.
Mm. There's one thing we might not give away because it is a mystery, but it's another moment, isn't it, when you start pulling on the thread.
Yeah.
You had a hunch about who might have written that letter that your mother burned.
I certainly did have a hunch. In fact, that was very much a part of my searching. One of the things that I wanted to be absolutely sure of was that this was an evidenced. So there's quite an extensive bibliography for people who do research. And yes, the answer is yes. And yes, it is a mystery. And yes, you should read the book.
It all will be revealed.
Yes.
Thank you, Helen Ritchie. The book is The Burned Letter, A New Zealander's Holocaust Mystery. Thank you
very much, Catherine.